On January 12, Karpinsky was on a mission near the Iranian border, sent there by General Sanchez, when she checked her email on the military's SIPRNet, its secure internal internet system. She saw one from the head of the Army's Criminal Investigation Division, its internal FBI. Curious, she opened it first and read two short sentences notifying her that her unit was being investigated for prisoner abuse. It isn't clear what had sparked that inquiry. The next day, Specialist Joseph Darby put photographs of the abuse occurring in Cell Block 1-Alpha into a plain envelope and slipped them under the door of their investigators. They looked at them, then accelerated their inquiry into hyperdrive. Just after midnight on January 14, Captain Donald Reese, the 39-year-old commander of one of Karpinsky's subordinate units, the 372nd Military Police Company, was awakened and told that his battalion commander wanted to see him. After he had dressed and arrived at the unit headquarters, he was greeted by Chief Warrant Officer Second Class Paul Arthur, an official from the Army's CID. "We have to do an investigation on your soldiers," he was told, according to a statement he gave later. "We believe they're involved in some alleged abuse." 2 hours later, Reese, who in civilian life was a salesman from New Stanton, Pennsylvania, knocked on the door of Frederick, the sergeant who was chief of the night shift on 1-Alpha. "Freddy, CID is here and they want to talk to you," Reese said. Arthur and other CID agents seized Frederick's weapons and computer and interrogated him until 4 a.m. Frederick claimed in a statement that he had questioned some of the practices in the prison, but that the answer I got was, "This is how military intelligence wants it." A few days later, Karpinsky met with Sanchez in his office at Camp Victory, the ornate set of palaces Saddam had built in a series of artificial lakes just east of Baghdad Airport. It was their second one-on-one meeting during her time in Iraq. It was a curt meeting, held at 9 at night, extremely late for officers whose days begin at dawn. "He was insulted by my presence. That's what he communicated to me," she recalled later, after consulting her daily journal. "Do you know what this is going to do to my army?" Sanchez said, she recalled. He issued a formal letter of admonishment to her. This established for the official army record that her performance was markedly below expectation. Karpinsky wanted to offer some suggestions on how to handle the situation. It was a bad misreading of Sanchez's mood. "Sir, I've been in the Middle East for years, and I have a good relationship with the press here," she began. She offered to have a statement issued in Arabic that would put all this on my shoulders. She had even thought about how to release some of the digital images of torture. Her notion was to get out ahead of this mess. "We can choose a couple of photographs, and at least—" Sanchez cut her off, she recalled. "Absolutely not," he told her. "The Army wasn't going to let those photos out. There's not going to be any contact between you and the press," he added, according to notes she made in her journal that night. A series of official investigations ultimately would hang the criminal blame for Abu Ghraib on a group of low-ranking soldiers and the military responsibility on Brigadier General Karpinsky. The military establishment was unsympathetic. She felt herself a victim, and she propagated a negativity that permeated throughout the brigade, Air Force Colonel Henry Nelson, a psychiatrist involved in the investigation, concluded. It was a tragic moment for a military with a long and proud heritage of treating its prisoners better than most, especially one that had come to Iraq thinking of itself as a liberation force, again, solidly in the American tradition. During the Revolutionary War, the historian David Hackett Fisher noted, General George Washington had often reminded his men that they were an army of liberty and freedom, and that the rights of humanity for which they were fighting should extend even to their enemies. This compassion toward prisoners was extended by Washington expressly in the face of the cruel British handling of American captives. Washington ordered Lieutenant Colonel Samuel Blakely Webb, in a passage quoted by Fisher, "Treat them with humanity, and let them have no reason to complain of our copying the brutal example of the British Army in their treatment of our unfortunate brethren." The United States Army was a long way from home in Iraq.